Blog Talk Radio. This is Love's Outer Limits, and I'm your host, Dr. Amy Marsh, sexologist, hypnotist, lots of other kinds of things, and I'm with my co-host, M. Christian, otherwise known as Chris, erotica writer, sexuality writer, sexual futurist, and also lots of all kinds of other things. We've got a great show lined up for you today, so welcome. Well, good morning, listeners, and good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It is so hot where I'm living right now. It's miserable. It was a little cooler this morning, but the day's heating up. So I'm glad we're doing this podcast in the mornings, actually. So how about you? What's going on with you? Do you want to do a shout out? Do you want to be the starter?
It's absolutely. It's getting warm here, too. I just looked at the weather report. It's going to supposed to hit 90 on Tuesday. So, you know, definitely try and stay cool, and I'll stay cool up here for sure.
Okay. Yeah, we'll try, right? Shout outs. You've got a new book out. Why don't you start talking?
Yeah, I haven't started the publicity on it yet, but I'll start probably this week. It's called Horror Sexual, and it's a collection of my queer male erotic horror stories. So it's kind of like the best of the best of my scary but sexy stories.
It was very cool. This morning I read two of your stories in preparation for the show because you told me these were the ones that, featured a form of haunting or spectrosexuality. It was a lot of fun. We'll talk about those in a little bit. Is there anything else you want to add to your shout out this morning?
I'm going to close my window here. Just give me 1 second. There we go.
Okay. Yeah.
You see, kind of the usual suspects. I have some pieces that showed that appeared in the wonderful futureofsex.net. A couple showed up for Hot Movies. Queer Majority, started to promote my piece Queer Like Me, which I'm very excited about. They're a wonderful place. I really like them. They're fantastic to work for. And then the big thing I think is next Sunday is the concluding part of my two-part erotica writing class for As You Like It, and that's a two-hour one that delves more into the hideous nuts and bolts of erotica writing, you know, self-publishing versus publishing, PR, social media, you know, all that kind of fun stuff.
That sounds great, and that's an online class, so people can sign up for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do they reach you? Do they go to your website and sign up?
Probably the best way they can reach me through that and a lot of things. I do update my website periodically. Probably the best is to follow me on Twitter or just look at my Twitter feed, which is M. Christian Zobop, Zobop. And that's where I usually post a lot of information. I know I've been particularly, posting things about, you know, this wonderful podcast and the other one I do with Ralph Rico, as well as the class and other things. So it's probably the best way they can probably find the information.
Excellent. So they can link through that. And this information about our websites and our Twitter feeds are in the show notes for this show, too, in case nobody had a chance to write that down. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And you've certainly been busy with some wonderful projects.
I have, and some that are very strange. But probably the biggest piece of excitement this last week was on Sunday. Sexologist Carlos, who has a YouTube channel called Ask Carlos, and he's really, really fun and very bubbly, but also a serious-minded person when you get down to it. I mean, he's got the degrees and credentials. He finally had finished the editing and launched his erotic hypnosis episode, which is an interview with me. So that was really cool. So here I am, you know, being part of a very, very fun, very prolific, and very informative YouTube channel. So that was really nice. So go to YouTube, find Ask Carlos, and look for the sexologist with a lot of pink in the screens. And and that's the place to go. Let's see. I started also teaching last week another round of my Hypnosis for Sexual Problems, a professional training course. You have to have 100 hours of hypnosis training to even enroll. And I've got 4 people in the class, which is wonderful. And
that's cool.
Yeah. And I'm working on my Hypnosis for Community Wellness curriculum too, which is going to be launched in August 1st. I do have scholarships available for people who are social justice and wellness advocates and activists. So email me, dr.amymarshsexologist@gmail.com. Or go to the Intimate Hypnosis Training Center site. I should probably stick that in the show notes for the time being. But there's stuff is moving along. I'm so happy that California governor has made wearing masks mandatory. I don't know if that's going to help in this redneck county where I live, but it makes me feel a little bitter about things, you know. Anyway, that's kind of it for that. So let's see, anything else we should mention?
Oh, just to keep staying safe. Like you mentioned, you know, wear your masks, stay at home as much as possible. And also just to keep the protests going. I mean, this is something we can't just let slide, and we have to, you know, join the voices and, you know, make this country, you know, what it should be, and, you know, be out there and support, you know. It's Pride Month. We just, you know, Juneteenth was yesterday. We need to keep the pressure going. We need to keep the, you know, the energy going up, because this is what we need to do.
Right. And if for some reason you can't, for some reason you can't be in the streets protesting, or there isn't someplace near you where demonstrations are happening, there's lots and lots of other ways to stay involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to say yesterday when I was out, I actually went to the supermarket during regular hours, not senior shopping hours, which was a real stretch for me, but I needed to go. And it's a drive around the lake. So I had the car, you know, stereo going, and I was listening to a really old album of Taj Mahal's. In fact, it might have been his first. And there's a song called Step Outside Your Mind. And there's a lyric, you know, it's a very sweet song, a sweet appeal to somebody who's been sad. And the song is sort of an offer to, you know, take that person outside of their grief and show them how joyful life can be again. And there are these lyrics. I'm quoting now, remember the feeling as a child when you woke up and morning smiled. And I started to cry because, you know, nobody, especially Black people and Indigenous people and people of color in this country, how often do they get to have that experience of being unguarded and simply relaxed and joyful just as a matter of course, as part of being human? You know, it's I can't even fathom what it takes to walk out into the world with all the terrors and the horrors and the cruelty that can just come your way. You know, I am waiting for the extinction of the dreaded Carinosaurus. I'm going to say that. I want the, not an actual asteroid, but I want the social cultural asteroid to hit and, you know, just blast that kind of behavior to smithereens, I'm telling you. So, yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it here. But Speaking of stories, we've got an interesting topic today, and that's spectrum sexuality. And it's kind of amazing how completely pop culture, plus religions and a lot of other things, are absolutely soaked with accounts and imaginings and stories about people who are having romantic and sexually intimate experiences with vampires, werewolves, ghosts, angels, shapeshifters, demons, deities, you name it. And so I thought we'd talk about some of those books and maybe TV shows and movies that talk about, or not talk about, because they're showing a story of that kind of a relationship, a corporeal human being with a non-corporeal being that is, you know, very much able to be involved with, you know, with the human, the living human, I should say. So because you've got your new book out, and I've got a link to it in the show notes now, it's the whole title is Horror Sexual, The Queer Erotic Fright Fiction of M. Christian. And I've got to say, I really had fun reading Matches and Echoes this morning. Aww. And I also read Dead Letter as well, which isn't in that book, but you had sent me a copy of that. So why don't you talk a little bit about those stories?
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you so much. And you're right, this is an absolutely fascinating topic. I mean, I've always been kind of like excited about the idea of this. I mean, you know, the otherworldly, the other, and so forth, I always think is particularly fascinating. You know, it's like any opportunity I get to write about it, which is funny because I'm not really much of someone who really kind of like, you know, goes into spirituality, but I still think it's, you know, many beliefs and mythologies are absolutely fascinating. I think they show so much about who we are as human beings. It's just once again, it's like, it's just such a kick to explore. You know, I'm very lucky that I've had opportunities to write stories about this kind of subject. I know that particularly those Matches and Echoes were both written probably, you know, oh boy, I don't want to say how long ago that was. That was eons. And I know it was written, I think, for a project about, once again, kind of gay horror or spectral stories. So once again, I love, you know, getting these projects where people will say, hey, write for us and so forth. But of the two, I mean, it's funny because I've always been fascinated about ghosts, particularly inspectors, because for me, it's like, you know, it's one thing that no one's really kind of explored is the fact that the nature of a ghost is something that has passed, that has left this world and entered another. But we kind of like get, I guess, hung up with the whole, you know, idea of a ghost being like Casper or the Sheet and so forth. But other things can pass as well. And so I've always liked the idea of exploring like the fact of the afterlife or the ghost world being this kind of its own ecosystem, you know, and that's kind of what I did in Matches, which is this, you know, when you pass, it's not just like, you know, going from one plane of reality to another. There's an entire ecosystem of animals and insects and life forms that exist, you know, as part of their own culture. And the fact of with Echoes is pretty much my take on Rod Serling, because, you know, I wanted to do a kind of a ghost story without really having a personificated ghost. So it's actually more of a sensation or a presence. I actually did write another story, I can't remember the name of it offhand, where somebody is haunted by a desire that had been killed. So they were in a relationship and this person had acted poorly. And so when this, you know, when the relationship finally terminated, the poor victim was affected by this ghostly, you know, desire that they'd killed off.
Interesting. Yeah. So in a magic tradition, we might refer to something like that as a thought form. And when we're creating thought forms as, say, for example, servitors, they do take on a little life of their own to some extent, according to tradition. And you have to take care of them. You have to make sure they have work. You thank them. You attend to them. And then they do their job for you. So thought forms, you know, there are traditions, including witchy ones, where the thought forms can definitely take on a kind of a life. I enjoyed the really creepy, haunting oh, it's, you know, really, I mean, rotting corpse type haunting and echoes. And I'm not going to say anything more than that because I don't want to be a spoiler, but that was quite well done. And then matches I enjoyed because it was very poignant, the situation that one of the characters found themselves in. And again, I don't want to do a spoiler, but the fact that there was this idea that with death comes your ideal spirit body form. And it can be so much more fun than the one maybe that you had while you were in a human body. So that was super interesting. And I also enjoyed Dead Letter, because here we've got an author in your story writing about the experience of spectrosexuality. And there was a really great twist on that, again, which I won't give away. Do you remember where that was published, Dead Letter, where you published that first?
It was, like a lot of my stuff, it's probably originally published in either an anthology or a website. I'll have to do the research on that one. I don't think it's been collected yet. It could have been in... I've had a couple of collections. I can't remember offhand, but I'll do the research. And if I find out, or when I find out, I'll post it on Twitter, because I'm curious myself, because I can't remember offhand.
Yeah, that's
fine. Well, thank
fine.
You for your kind words. It really means a lot to me.
Well, you're so prolific. I can certainly understand why you might have trouble remembering where something's been published. And so, yeah, that'd be great. It'd be great to have that info. So yeah, it was fantastic to read the stories. Thank you so much for that. I want to talk a little bit about my own fantasy novels for a minute,
yes,
but
please.
I'm going to wait on that, because I want to talk first about this whole genre of paranormal romance, and it is huge. Now, I'm not one for reading romance novels. But you can find, you know, your usual cishet type of paranormal romance, hundreds of titles. Goodreads has all kinds of lists that people have compiled. So you can find over 100 titles easy in some of these lists that are published on Goodreads. There's queer paranormal romance. I came across a website for something called theothersideanthology.com, which was queer comic book paranormal romance anthology. That just looked like that could be so super cool. Unfortunately, I didn't see any pages of sample artwork, but I became very interested in this website, and I'll probably check it out. And then, of course, there's a category, huge amount of things have been written, African-American paranormal romance, and many people doing series. And of course, Octavia Butler, who was the first science fiction writer to get the MacArthur Foundation Genius Award, as well as Hugo and what's the other big science fiction award?
Nebula.
So she's also won those awards. She has at least three series. I don't know how much of paranormal romances in the different series, but she did show up on the list as having some of those elements in her books. There's also a Vampire Huntress series by L.A. Banks. There's the African Immortals by Tanana Reeve Dewe, which apologies if I mispronounced that name, and many other people writing asides. And I was getting off, too, on a lot of the different titles. Now, these were ones from actually the just paranormal romance category without broken down into special categories. But I got a kick out of titles like The Ghost and the Goth, you know, or My Favorite Phantom, Love in the Time of Poltergeist, you know, which,
oh,
you know, automatic. And that made me think of, you know, the sex scenes where the furniture's getting tossed around the room. You know, I don't know if that actually happened in the book, but that's what I thought of immediately. So, yeah, you know, this is pop culture. There's also, fairies and elves also show up. Angels, I think I might have mentioned, they show up in some of this mm-hmm. kind of fiction as well. And certainly different deities. But with regard to my own, it's funny, my still works in progress Guild of Ornamental Hermits series, which I imagine as a trilogy, and I'm working on two of the first two books now. There's definitely paranormal romance of different kinds, and it's not just human to paranormal, but in some parts of the book it's also different categories of paranormal with other categories of paranormal beings. Mm-hmm. So that's fun, and I think, as I've mentioned before in an earlier podcast, that the elves in my book have 29 different genders, which I have described in detail what each one of those genders is. However, there's, only 12 elves in the first book, so they're not representing all the different 29 genders. But, they come from a world where that's happening. But my first book, The Dire Deeds of the Guild of Ornamental Hermits, actually, really early on, the paranormal relationship of an elf and a human comes in on page 6, if we're looking at double-spaced pages. Okay, I've got to say that. We're still drafting it. And I thought I might read the 3 paragraphs where that topic is introduced.
Please, absolutely.
Okay, and apologies, because my voice feels a little hoarse again this morning, so I'm just going to do my best. So Professor Almond, I have to say before I start reading, is an elf from the realm, which is in my book, where the elves live and where they come from. So just so you know that. Also, Hermitville is a collective farm and arts colony in Pahoa on the Big Island of Hawaii. So when I mention Hermitville, you know where you are. And I think that's all I need to explain at this point before I start reading. So here we go. Professor Almond was strolling. It was his habit to stroll in 2 or 3 dimensions at once. The crunchy gravel of Earth's Hermitville was as present to his bare, calloused feet as the mossy pebbled paths of the realm. The bubbling spring chakra at the ball of his foot was pleasantly stimulated by the contrasting, simultaneous stabbing of volcanic gravel and the feathery mosses coating river-rounded rocks. In one place, it was past midnight. In another, golden morning lit the tops of trees. The professor wandered past Hermitville's moonlit cluster of tiny ecopods, aware of the dreaming breath of the mortals within. He stopped briefly in front of one particular pod, smiled a sad smile, and then continued on his way. Her cottage was just up the gravel path, and he looked forward to paying a call, the first in 3 years. Almond, already truly beautiful, boosted his glamour just a little as he walked, aware but not ashamed of his own fantasy. She had been a woman worth pleasing. Had been? The professor stopped and dug his toes past the mossy pebbles into the rough gravel. The pain forced a sharp exclamation from his expressive lips. He had never thought of her in the past tense before. He stretched his senses towards her cottage and found nothing but a stiffening carcass. He sank to his knees and bowed his head. Farda stars, not even a goodbye. His love was lost to him forever. Where mortals pass, the elves cannot follow. And, so that's the end of that scene.
That's lovely.
Yeah, thank you. I've borrowed a little bit of that last part from a concept that I found first in Emma Bull's book, War for the Oaks. And there's this idea in her book, and it's an urban fantasy classification, but it does have a paranormal romance. But there's a concept in her book that the elves and fairies don't have the same, what happens to humans after they die is really kind of a closed realm to them. They just don't go there. They can't go there. It's different for them. So, a little homage there to Emma Bull, who's really enjoyable. And her depiction of a romance between a female rock and roller and a fuka, who also can become a super cute human being. You know, it was fun. It's a great read. The fuka is a great character, very tricksy, and, you know, as fukas probably should be. So let's see. Gosh, and we haven't even gotten into TV shows and movies, but you have to do is media is our entertainment is just stuffed with tales of paranormal romance, especially with teenagers. You know, I mean, how many teenage vampire things are there? There's just like way too much. It's all over the place. Vampires, werewolves, angels, shapeshifters. You don't see a lot of teen ghost stuff, though, at least not in the media. Ghosts seem to be an underutilized paranormal romance when it comes to, you know, sort of the teen stuff. I'm not sure why. You don't see demons very often either, unless they're just bad guys. But there was that scene in Buffy in that one episode. It was a musical episode where her little sister was going to be whisked away by a very suave dancing demon if Buffy didn't, you know, best him in her challenge. It was a dance off, pretty much. So you know, there's a little hint of demonic sex there, of course. You know, and of course the vampire thing. What comes up for you? What can you think of any? And this is just the English-speaking stuff. I mean, we're not talking about the rest of the world. But what have you noticed? What's come across your radar recently?
Well, I have a couple of theories, and keep in mind that I'm not exactly like a professional researcher on the subject. This is just kind of a, you know, sitting in my sofa here and, you know, smoking my pipe and waxing poetic, but. I think sometimes the way that's more popular to have vampires, of course, is kind of a cultural phenomenon, because vampires were a relatively recent invention, of course, after Bram Stoker. But, you know, ghosts, I think because they're so ephemeral, it's kind of hard for people to sometimes to kind of manifest them as an erotic partner. Though that hasn't always been the case. You know, if you look into research around like the 1800s, especially with spiritualism, you know, around that time, the concept of the dead being reachable and communicating with and interacting with was much more common. It was, you know, kind of considered like that was just part of the world, you know, to the point where it was, like I said, it was just like part of mainstream society. But I also think it's like sometimes it's like you mentioned before, other cultures. And that's really fascinating. I mean, I've never been comfortable with, you know, works that sort of culturally appropriate, you know, different, you know, cultures, you know, spirituality or such. Very often it feels really kind of predatory. But at the same time, I do love hearing about how ghosts are very different, for instance, in like, you know, Japanese or Chinese society or in Vietnam or, you know, in other countries, how they're different manifestations and how sometimes they're not actually directly linked to a being passing on. Sometimes they're just simply otherworldly, like they exist in their own pocket world of, you know, where they're just simply a fellow resident.
Right. I am wondering, since in cultures and traditions, spiritual traditions, where there is a ready acknowledgement of supernatural or paranormal, you know, whatever you want to use, preternatural beings other than human, I would expect that there would be love stories between human beings and these other spirit folks. I know that, I'm going to talk about this in a minute, actually, so I guess I should just dive in right now. What the heck? So,
sure.
This works perfectly, actually. We're a half an hour into the show. I might as well jump into the sexological side of things here. So we've talked about books, we've talked about our own writing, we've talked about other people's writing, we've mentioned, you know, media, you know, movies and television and so on, and the entertainment value of paranormal romances. But in the sexological literature, in and I found this first in Brenda Love's, what does she call it? The Encyclopedia of Unusual Sex Practices, which was published in 1992. Oh. She talks about spectrophilia as a fetish or a kink. And, you know, and of course she mentions tales of, you know, well-known in the West of the incubus and the succubus, you know, these sexy spirits that grab you while you're asleep. She, of course, mentions the liaison between the Christian God and Mary as a spectrosexual romance, which it certainly is, and a foundation of one of the world's religions. Let's say it right there. Not my favorite religion, but, you know, it's there's a lot of people there. I'm not sure how many people are really kind of down with the spectrosexuality aspect of it as such. I think they just kind of gloss over, you know. But it's definitely
I've always wondered
thing.
If Mary had a good time or whether it was just kind of a, you know, come and go situation.
I hope it was a good time. There's also the tradition of the brides of Christ in Christianity, and those brides could be either cis female or cis male, and the very, very famous spiritual ecstatic, St. Teresa of Avila, 14th century mystic. You know, I mean, she, her writing, her experiences are enshrined in great works of art, statues, and so on. Again, this real acknowledgement in spiritual tradition and in the arts that there is something to this idea that human beings can have these intimate experiences with non-corporeal beings. My thought is, if it wasn't happening, we wouldn't be making stories about it. And whether the stories look like myths, legends, fairy tales, or religious beliefs, it doesn't matter. There is a core foundation of truth to, you know, we're far more interesting than we think we are. And and so I've actually come to view spectrosexuality as part of the very broad bandwidth of human sexual behavior. Like, as a sexologist,
wonderful.
I feel completely comfortable saying that.
I completely agree. I mean, that's actually a really excellent point.
Well, I've got, you know, a lot, not as in depth as I want to be, but I've done a lot of looking into this, that, and the other thing to come to that conclusion. And there's two things that factor into that. First of all, this long history of acknowledgments of these kinds of relationships. And you find that in traditional tantra, where some of the meditative practices are imagining yourself coupled with a deity or imagining yourself as a deity coupled with another deity. So that's certainly a form of spirit sex, access through meditation. There's Western sex magic, which can be either alone, partnered with a human being, or partnered with a spirit of some kind. So that's just acknowledged in the Western magic, Western sex magic traditions. Of course, we have the witch's sabbat stories of, you know, witches having big time fun with the devil. So that's another example.
Oh, yes.
And the bhakti devotional poetry, excuse me, in India, where I know somebody who's much more of an expert on this than I am. I just have the barest little glimmering of knowledge in order to even mention it. But there was a legal status for people who were actually married to deities. And the Bhakti devotional poetry, a lot of it is directed at Krishna, not all of it, but that was very common and it was considered legit. You know, it's just like, okay. So again, it's everywhere. And it's also in Western kind of neo-pagan traditions. But before I go into my survey, and I did a survey on this, like, you know, like any good sexologist should, though it's not a scientific survey, and I'll explain why I say that in a minute. But the other thing that we need to know about, sexologically speaking, is that human beings, not all human beings, but human beings in general, have the capacity for hands-off orgasms, awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this isn't just nocturnal emissions experienced by people with a penis. So Kinsey, in Sexuality in the Human Male, Kinsey, Pomeroy, and Martin, in 1948, found that out of 5,000 men studied, 3 or 4 were able to ejaculate purely from fantasy. I'm almost quoting here from the book, without touch or physical stimulation. And you find that on pages 517 to 518. So I keep notes. And this is waking again. But nearly 2% of the nearly 5,000 wide awake women that were studied, and that book, Sexuality and the Human Female, by Kinsey, Pomeroy, Martin, and Gebhard in 1954, they were able to achieve orgasm through psychic stimulation. Okay, so that's Kinsey. It shows up there, right? Now, there's something I want to say about this in a minute, but I'll cite a few more studies. So in 1992, Beverly Whipple, Gina Ogden, and Barry Komisarek compared blood pressure, pupil dilation, heart rate, and pain threshold in 10 women who experienced orgasm without physical stimulation, and then compared with self-stimulation. And the above physiological responses were approximately doubled during orgasm. And
wow.
Later, Komisarek, or I think that's how you pronounce his name, and Whipple used the fMRI imaging to compare thought orgasms to physically induced orgasms. And the only difference between them was a lack of amygdala activity during the thought orgasm. Mm-hmm. So these studies were cited in The Science of Orgasm, published in 1992 by Komisarek, Bayer-Flores, and Whipple. Mary Roach, a writer of all kinds of amusing books, wrote a book called Bonk, and she interviewed a woman who had learned a hand-free orgasm technique from Annie Sprinkle in the mid-1990s.
Ah.
And actually, Mary Roach does a TED Talk where she's something like 10 things you didn't know about orgasm, and she tells a very funny story about this interview, and I don't want to give it away. So why do we have this capacity, either latent or realized, to have orgasms without physical stimulation? Think about that a minute. Could it be, okay, this is wild hypothesis here, wild hypothesis. Could it be that we have this capacity because we are in part physically designed to experience non-corporeal intimate pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
And why would we have that capacity if somehow this ability to engage intimately with spirit beings, if that wasn't actually a thing? I mean, what on earth would explain the development of that capacity? But it's there. It's in our brains. People can do it. It might take a little training and practice for some. And I certainly see this with erotic hypnosis. I mean, people can be hypnotized to have their, orgasms without touching as well. So with these thoughts in mind, last year, before I do that, maybe I had to pause for a minute and let you say something for a change.
No, I'm actually thoroughly enjoying this. I think this is absolutely, once again, not to keep repeating myself, but it's absolutely fascinating. And even though I never considered myself, particularly spiritual and not at all religious, I do really believe that there is, the other, that there are points in our consciousness and our universe where, we are stepping beyond. And I've experienced it personally myself, in dreams naturally, also in sex, and also in writing, where I feel like I'm no longer in my body and am somewhere else. And I've also experimented with, substances and felt that as well. So I definitely do not agree, do not disagree with you, which came out weird. I agree with you in that, because I do think there's like a facility. And I think it's absolutely one of those things I would love to explore in the future, because I find it, once again, particularly interesting that, you know, we have this, you know, methodology in place because of fiction and religion and spirituality and such, but I've always kind of felt it a little limiting. You know, it's always kind of based on kind of too much in the real world, like, you know, like the idea of a spirit being a single entity as opposed to a cult, you know, as opposed to being like a collective consciousness or something similar. So this is something I think would be absolutely wonderfully, very, very, you know, fascinating to explore.
Well, it is interesting. You know, I have to say that this idea of spectrosexuality, which I'm using instead of spectrophilia, which I acknowledge there are definitely people out there with, you know, that kind of urge and kink, and obviously popular culture is feeding this to some extent, but mm-hmm. I'm using the term spectrosexuality to just acknowledge this as, you know, one of the many things that people do or can do if they wish to.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a short survey that I did with people who first identified as some part of the pagan or neo-pagan community, mostly in the U.S. I'm not sure I had any respondents internationally. I'd have to go back and look.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but that they did have some experience at least once of feeling as if they had an intimate encounter with a non-corporeal being.
Mm.
So this was not a random sample survey. So that right there makes it not scientific. But so it's less about the numbers. I got 100 respondents and then I cut the survey off. Less about the numbers and more about the qualitative data, the comments that people took. But, you know, the qualitative comments that people expressed, you know, as well as, you know, checking the little boxes. But there's a fascinating range. Like question 5 asked, who are your intimate partners and do your intimate relationships usually include physical sexuality or not? And
mm-hmm.
I asked the question in that way, of course, because I wanted to acknowledge people who identify as asexual in some fashion. So I didn't want to just assume that physical sexuality was the only, the only important thing to consider here. And 22 of the 100 had one or more human partners. 28 had one or more God or spirit partners. And there can be some overlap
mm-hmm.
here, by the way. And 40 had both human and God spirits. So actually that's our overlap right there.
Mm.
Some people consider themselves a God or spirit spouse or God or spirit consort with one or more spirit partners. That was 39 people out of the 100. And 48 of those folks say their intimate relationships often include some form of physical sexuality. And 14 out of the 100 said their intimate relationships usually do not include any form of physical sexuality. So, you know, there's that. What was interesting, so I'm going to read a few of the comments. I know we're starting to get sort of towards the end. And there's so much more to say about this this topic. So, you know, maybe we'll do another one. So
mm-hmm.
one person said, I'm a God spouse plus a human partner. My human partner is unaware of God spouse. One person said, I'm cis-hetero with a marriage to a cis-hetero husband, but there's a strong presence of Loki within our sexual intimacy.
Mm.
Another person said, I used to have a partner with whom we used to channel each other's gods. It's sometimes including
Ooh.
Getting intimate too. Now my husband isn't into such things, but I do suspect he's been taken over a few times. It's not a regular thing, however, and seems to be completely random. So that refers to a practice called horsing, you know, which is a form of
okay.
Usually invited possession. So You know, like, do you want to do this at parties? I'm not sure, but, you know, whatever. let's see. Some people describe their spirit relationships. I have had sexual encounters with spirits, but none currently, and none that I would label as a true partnership. Let's see. Now, this is an interesting one. It's a little long. Someone wrote, my relationship with Loki was not initially sexual, but became so over a period of time. I'm of the opinion that it is more natural for relationships with the divine to have some sexual aspects than not, since sexuality is an essential part of how we perceive the universe and of the creation of new life. Based on my own historical studies, it appears to me that sexual relationships with gods were more normal than abnormal in the pre-Abrahamic world, but that the Abrahamic faith scrubbed any and all sexual references from religious theology and ceremony. So that's an interesting comment. Let's see. Somebody else says, my tradition was initiated by the sex with the devil witch father, as many Scottish trads are, meaning Scottish tradition. Now, only one person mentioned having this happen in their sleep. So one person said, all my life I've been in touch with spirits. At times I'm overcome with their sexuality in my sleep. Now, the incubus and succubus phenomena is often explained as a form of night terror and sleep paralysis. But I found it very interesting that pretty much everybody who responded to the survey, they were talking about wide awake experiences. I mean, they may have been during ritual or meditation, but they were awake. Let's see, somebody else says, a couple of people did have discomfort with it. So most of the spirit intimacy encounters that were reported in this particular survey were with people where it was cool, it was consensual, but there were a couple of people who reported, or a few, more than a couple, a few reported non-consensual experiences. So here's one response. Hearn, Cernunnos, who of course is a horned god, claim me as one of his consorts. I'm not entirely sure what it means, but he tends to bring a very sexual energy with him when he appears to me. I've taken to using a protective barrier against it because I'm not comfortable with it, and I'm not willing to commit to a relationship like that with a spiritual being. He seems to think I'll come around eventually, but I'm just not seeing it anytime soon. So, you know, what's interesting to me about this, too, is people are very matter-of-fact in this survey. And, you know, while there were a few responses where people were maybe, I don't want to be judgmental, but some things seemed like a little hard to give credence to, especially there were a couple of responses where, you know, it was almost like somebody had named every single deity in the book as somebody they'd had a sexual encounter with. And I, you know, of course you could be, you know, very active in that way. There's no shame, but it did make me wonder, you know, is this person pulling my leg? Do they have not a great inability to discern things, or is this really their experience, you know, and without maybe delving deeper, it would be hard for me to understand that. Some satisfaction, people were generally, 55 people out of the 100 were very satisfied with their spirit relationships and sexually intimate contacts. And I defined satisfied as emotionally or physically happy. 33% were often satisfied. So that's a huge number right there. With only 12 people out of the survey either not satisfied or dissatisfied or were dissatisfied. So that's interesting. A few of the comments there that I'll share, unless you want to make a comment before I read a couple more.
Oh, please go ahead. This is absolutely, I'm absolutely riveted. I think this is absolutely intriguing. And, you know, one thing that crossed my mind, too, is I've known several people who've reported spectral sexual experiences with someone who is not a deity but a celebrity, or even someone who is still alive, like they've somehow connected with the idea of this person as an independent entity of the actual person themselves. I think that's particularly, you know, really interesting.
I wonder if that's a case of, you know, sort of a thought form or an imposter spirit,
mm-hmm.
because we do hear about those, could be part of that. Let's see. People have emotional ups and downs in these relationships. Let's see. Sometimes there's challenges. Someone said, when it happened, I was confused and so sure I was going crazy. When I got confirmation, I was elated for a little bit. Then I got overwhelmed by everything, his constant presence, me freaking out all the time, lack of communication, and we decided to give it a break. I'm not sure if that break will ever end, but I'm glad I experienced what I did. So spectrosexuality is not for everybody. And yes, you definitely can wonder about your own sanity. By confirmation, it's possible that this person consulted some form of divination, maybe offered by another person, in order to try to
mm-hmm.
understand what's going on. That's pretty common. Somebody said, in 14 years of marriage and nearly 20 years of intimacy with the same being, I am still at an utter loss for words as regards how to discuss my satisfaction and physical happiness, as you put it. So, you know, that was an interesting comment. There's a lot people deal with, you know, to tell their human partner, if any, about these things or not. And as in any polyamorous type relationship, you know, where you've got more than one lover, no matter how corporeal or non-corporeal, there's ups and downs. There's needs, there's your needs, there's stuff you have to do. but I think this sums up more than anything else. This comment from one person says, honestly, why have a human partner? Lol. So that was in response to the satisfaction question, which was question 8. So there were 10 questions in all, and I'm not going to go into everything, but I'm hoping this gives a nice kind of, an introduction to the topic. You know, there's a lot going on out there, and it's not just at Salad. So, hey, we've got a few minutes left. Do you think we ought to see if anybody wants to call in? I totally forgot about that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so if there's anyone listening out there, we've got 7 minutes, and you could call in at 516-531-9238. So 516-531-9238. So let's see if anybody takes us up on that. In the meantime, let's see, what else should we add?
The only thing I can think about really kind of adding in, because you touched on this, is these are people who are by and large having, you know, pretty, pleasant experiences that, unfortunately, because of many people's cultural upbringing as well as religious, you know, bias, some people might be really scared or, you know, feel that they're being attacked or condemned. And while I do think that's something that is a very personal thing, it's also remember that, you know, this does not necessarily mean anything. I mean, you know, it could be a very benevolent and pleasant experience. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, the Ouija board has done something to you, or, you know, Satan himself has decided to pay you a visit. So, you know, it's like, you know, it is kind of like a lot of things. You have to unwind a lot of, you know, cultural kind of bias in there.
Well, and I will say, you know, in all fairness, that there are people out there that if Satan decided to pay them a visit, they'd be like totally up for a hookup. So, you know, just acknowledging there are people who have demons as partners as well. I know a couple lovely people, actually, who have deity and demon partners. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, you know, it's, and I know this is a stretch because there are people who will say, no, it's just many manifestations of one energy. And other people say, no, you know, these are distinct and separate beings as far as anybody can be, you know, distinct. You know, there's a lot of back and forth around all these things, which we don't need to get into. But if somebody feels good about this experience, if they've had this kind, as long as they have, I don't know, sort of discernment and nice people around them who will be supportive, they'll probably be okay. But it's also possible mm-hmm. to put up wards, psychic shields, etc., do rituals. If you don't want a spirit being pestering you, you can definitely make them go away. And you don't have to resort to some other kind of authority to do that. You can just sort of stand your own ground and say, you're leaving, don't come back, show them the door. That's it. And that usually does the job from what I hear. I've talked with people about this, and yeah, you know, as a sexologist, I love it. And as a mystic, I love it. And as a witchy person, I love it. You know, this is just the most fun. Yeah. So nobody's called in. I'm going to give the number one more time, 516-531-9238. Anybody out there who wants to call in, you've got 4 minutes to ask a question and get it answered. Let's see. Oh, gosh. You know, I will say one thing, Chris. You and I have got to sit down and come up with topics for the next few shows. We've got one more, which I think is another reading or literature one. We have to start talking about, you know, who are we going to have back on the show? I know Shakun Sethi from Tickle.life would like to come back on.
Absolutely.
You know, we had so much fun with her. So we'll have that conversation off the air, you know, figuring out topics for our next.
There's certainly a lot to talk about, which is so exciting and wonderful about the show. And I really say, once again, thank you so much for including me, because it's been absolutely delightful.
Oh, it's totally fun. I love doing this with you, Chris. Really good time. And I hope our listeners are getting, you know, some interesting ideas and information from these shows that we're doing. I feel very relaxed. You know, I feel very comfortable talking about these things. And you sound that way too. So I think that makes for a good experience for our listeners. At least I hope so. So, okay. Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and sign us off and invite everybody to come back next week or show up if you've never shown up before. Please join us. Tell your friends. Maybe call in and ask a question. And Chris, have a great rest of the weekend. And folks, don't forget to check out his new book, Horror Sexual. You can find it on Amazon as a Kindle download at this point. And so really, judging by the two stories I read, super, super fun book. So.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you once again. I hope you have a lovely weekend.
Thank you. I'll be teaching tomorrow. That'll be fun. Anyway, so here we go, and I'll say goodbye, and I'll start our little ending theme music. So everybody be safe and well. Fight the power. Goodbye.